Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome along to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme this evening, in a moment, myself and Dave will discuss some of today's business headlines from the local and national papers.
In the business of this week, it's the business of mulch. John McGuinness, the award-winning and locally based mulch company, will be here to tell us about their exciting business plans.
David Bell from the HR department will be here for his regular look at HR issues from the employer's point of view. This week, a look at how employers can help working parents with all the stress of September.
And finally, Ronan Crinian from movehome.ie in Drumcondra joins us for an update on the latest commercial and domestic property values on the north side of the city.
Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories this evening, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. The number is 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business. #localbiz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So, Dave, just as we were coming on air, some breaking news. Britain's oldest travel agent is in big trouble.
Yeah, Thomas Cook is scrambling to stitch together a last-ditch fire sale in a bid to stave off a collapse and avert the biggest ever peacetime repatriation of British citizens. And it started off as a coach and horses transporter of tourists to Morecambe Sands many, many moons ago. And I read that in the book, so I know it. It's true.
It must be true.
The 178-year-old travel agent has this week been holding an emergency talks about a deal to offload its Nordic airline and tour operating units in a desperate attempt to raise cash. One stakeholder said it was a critical 24 hours for Thomas Cook's survival prospects. A successful outcome to the labyrinth of negotiations remains possible, although they cautioned that without imminent assurances the additional funding is forthcoming, parts are all of Thomas Cook will face being placed into administration in the next few days. Alex Partners, which has been advising the company for several months, is expected to be appointed to handle any insolvency process should the rescue efforts fail. So
one of the most memorable slogans in the travel business, don't just book it.
Thomas Cook it, exactly.
Now, Michael O'Leary has done something unusual. He signed up for another 5 years. Why is that unusual?
Yeah, because for the last 20 years, he's only signed a one-year rolling contract, and Michael couldn't stay easy, as you know, and he just said, you know, get on with it, shut up. He's changed, he's softened himself up, but they've had many changes. They've gone all sort of digital, gone into the bit. They wanted to be the Amazon of the airline business.
Kind of friendly and fuzzy, furry as well.
That kind of thing. So the shareholders of today narrowly approved a bonus scheme for the chief executive O'Leary that could earn him up to 100 million over 5 years. Now, that's not bad, is it? The bonus scheme, which requires him to either double the profitability or share price of the carrier within 5 years, was approved by 50.5% of the vote. So it was just narrowly approved. O'Leary, in February, said he would stay for another 5 years at Europe's largest low-cost airline. The airline's share price was roughly halved over the past 2 years amid a series of disputes, unions, delays, and the delivery of the ill-fated Boeing 737 MAX. O'Leary also said today's AGM the company has no backup plan if safety issues on the delayed Boeing MAX aircraft are not resolved. But addressing the shareholders at the airline's conference or annual meeting today, he said he thinks it's highly unlikely the new aircraft will never fly again. He said nobody in the industry believes that there's a fundamental safety issue with the aircraft, which have been grounded for following the two crashes. Now, plan B is to slow down growth further in the next year, in which case we have to do that. We'll have to slow it down. There will be less seats on sale, prices will be slightly higher, and shareholders will do better in the short term, he said this afternoon. But in the medium term, we've shown that growth at lower prices is the longer term is better for shareholders. But there's no doubt if we have to stop growing for the 18 months because we have no new aircraft in the short term, it would be very advantageous for shareholders, but not for those customers, he said. So he just said that the delivery of the 210 737 MAX were due to arrive this year, but due to the issues, he won't be getting them until February next year, and it could even be longer.
Could even be longer, depending how long it takes them to sort out the problem. problems? Well, the competitor of Boeing is Airbus, and Airbus have said that they're focused on reducing emissions while predicting sales growth. That's a hard circle to square.
Yeah, they're kind of trying to cozy up to the environmentalists here. I think airplane maker Airbus has said that its 20-year forecast for the jetliner demand, despite expecting slower growth in traffic, as it predicts airlines will replace aging fleets with smaller, more fuel-efficient models. Airbus expects airlines and leasing companies to take delivery of in excess of 39,000 new passenger jets and freighters over the next two decades, compared to 37,000 previously forecast. Now, touting the industry's record in cutting emissions, in a week that the Swedish teenage climate change activist Greta Thunberg pressed the US Congress for action on climate change, Airbus said the industry could still achieve carbon neutral growth because the new planes are so efficient. Now, environmental groups backing a global climate strike say more radical steps are needed to avert a disaster. And in a very interesting retort to that, they said the Mr. Schroeder from the company Airbus said, we are on a path to decarbonize, but we can't do it alone, and calling for investment in sustainable biofuels.
Interesting enough. Yeah. Okay. You wouldn't really consider necessarily Ireland Inc. as a safe haven for investment, or should we?
Or would we? The state has auctioned $500 million in 12-month treasury bills in a record low rate, offering investors an effective loss on their money at a point of 0.55%. Today's auction by the National Treasury Management Agency attracted four times the required bids from institutional investors, reflecting a strong demand for safe haven. Now, Ireland is a safe haven. We never thought we'd hear.
Well, we're politically stable, and we're in the EU and all those kind of things, I suppose.
Despite the punitive payouts on offer, now the minus 0.55 yield, the effective interest rate that will be paid when bonds and bills are redeemed, was marginally lower than the minus 0.54 yield achieved in NAMA last auction treasury bills 2 months ago. The auction attracted less interest from the same field of registered institution, which suggests that there is a growing demand. Yeah. So different people actually came about. Now, interestingly, the German offer is minus 0.68.
So we're better than the Germans.
So we're a little bit better.
And a little bit better, or thereabouts, the rate we talked last week from the ECB, where the interest rate they cut to minus 0.5 as well, so in around the same sort of rate you get from putting the money in the bank. So I'm sure that's why the investors are flocking to it.
Yeah.
The business of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Okay, we're back again, and it's great to have a live guest in the studio. Not that we've ever had anyone that wasn't live in the studio, to be honest with you, but we're delighted to welcome John McGuinness of Munch. Now, I just want to tell you a little bit about them. Munch is one of 19 national winners that have been selected to represent Ireland at the final stage of the competition, which will take place in Warsaw in Poland on the 3rd and 4th of December 2019, having been listed in the Ones to Watch report earlier this year. Munch is featured in the Social Response and Environmental Awareness Award category. Now, John McGuinness of the Coolock-based Eco Business has announced, as I said, as a national winner, and he joins me now in the studio. Very welcome to the studio, and lovely to have you here.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and maybe I know the brand. I know your trucks. You have a really nice brand and an image. Maybe you could just tell the listeners what your business is and what you do.
Yeah, super. So we set up the company about 7 years ago with the view to recycle Dublin's garden waste into compost and barks and other sustainable products that horticulturists can reuse in their gardens and landscapers and contractors and parks. So it's a closed-loop circular economy which saves the garden waste making its way to landfill, or the need for peat to be harvested from bogs and used as a compost medium. So it's a nice little circular system that isn't very common.
So what would your raw material be?
Just everything that comes out of a garden organically. So your grass, leaves, trees, hedges, branches, roots, everything from there up. So it makes its way to us via kind of domestic customers. They can bring it to us. We can collect the contractors, which are the landscapers and tree surgeons and everything. So they bring it up to us, and it all gets mulched up, I suppose. That's the word we use.
And is there much process in that? How are your environmental cautions and your restrictions looked after?
Sure. So it's bulked up in our depot in Coolock, and we bring it down. We've a couple of factories around Leinster that kind of akin to the craft beer brewery system, I suppose. Yeah. Like, so we go out and we make different composts and blends in different places. It's about a 14 to 17 week process to make your average garden waste into a perfect soil enricher compost medium, which then comes back into the depots and bagged up and goes back out in different forms, because some customers just want to buy a couple of bags and some customers want Arctic trucks. So it's everyone
and
in between.
You mentioned the craft beer business. We had a Hope Beer here on our last series, and it was a really good interview. Yeah. And they have a byproduct. These places have a byproduct. And you use that as well, you were saying?
We do. We work with the Porterhouse company in Finglas. So we collect their spent hops every couple of weeks when they've a batch done. And that gets put into the mix as well and blended up. And yeah, it all adds to the flavour, as they say.
How did you get involved in this area, John? I mean, why recycling, and why all that environmental area? Why not just go out and do something less stressful?
Sure. Previous to it, I had my own landscaping business in Dublin, so we were working for years, and we just saw that there was no good facility for all the landscapers, small, medium, large, to actually recycle conveniently all their garden waste. So it's a huge problem. It produces a huge volume. In St. Anne's Park, the county council had run a green waste facility there for years, but they kind of were a victim of their own success. It just got too big and it didn't appease the residents to kind of watch it going on around them. So we knew there could be a relationship there between people and the nature of recycling their garden waste and wanting to see that happen. So And the same on the other side of it, where they buy the materials, the compost, soils, barks. If you're in the building trade, for example, you can go into builders providers, and the selection of sands and cements and gravels and paves, it is extensive, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas when you went into a garden centre, most contractors were too big to buy anything in the garden centre because it's all plastic bags. And for them to buy soil and compost, they had to travel, 50 miles out of Dublin to kind of find a depot to bring it back. And it just, there wasn't a middle ground there for an average quantity. And what we've actually found is most people in a three-bed semi-D house, they'd actually use a 1 meter cube bag of bark or compost just to cover their front and back garden.
Right.
Or someone in an allotment, they would use a cube, which is 1,000 liters, a cubic meter bag, in their plot just to replenish the soil with the organic matter that it needs to kind of revitalize it annually. So it kind of has become the standard bag. I mean, very few people actually buy small bags.
And
not that many people want 20 tons, a big tipper truck. It's sure. just that little niche has become
so the sweet spot you've found there in the middle with all of that.
So it's
a really interesting business, and you set it up 8 years ago. And tell us about the progression over that time. I mean, I'm sure as the green agenda has come more to the fore, I'm sure your business is growing in line with that, or is it?
It's great now that the appetite for green has never been as kind of large as it is. But in the first couple of years, people were really kind of quite opposed, not opposed to it, but just to the habit. They were happy with the systems they had, whether they were using skips or whatever material they were buying. And it just took that little bit of extra, sales pitch convincing and work to kind of convert them. But when people did convert, they stuck. They just said, no, this is actually the right way, and it's better, and it feels right, and I know we're doing the right thing, and the cost difference was negligible. And they just kind of worked with that and said, no, we're happy. We want to do this way from now on. So, and nowadays, the appetite, is just there. Like, people want, they're asking questions. They have this eco-conscious coming into us, and they're like, no, we're here now because you're peat-free, or we're here because we love the circular economy of this business, and we can kind of keep it all within its means. Nothing's exported or imported. It's all done locally, which is, in so many industries, that's become the kind of bite word for a lot of people,
Just on a little bit further on the growth thing, how many people did you start with, and how many do you have now? And how is the growing bit? Three questions there. How is your growth?
Yeah, I'll grow. We started with two. We have now 7 full-time, 4 part-time staff.
Lovely.
We have a fleet of 5 trucks on the road. I see them all over Dublin.
Yeah, the lovely brand. Yeah, I've seen them. And they have a big high-ab lift on them as well.
A couple of trucks have that. And we've an Arctic that kind of moves the product from Dublin depots down the country and back up again. So that just gives us the kind of speed and logistics efficiency to kind of move the product really, really quickly. And it's just the growth's been great. Like I said, the appetite for green really made the difference in the last couple of years. Now people are just getting that uplift of going, no, we want to know, like, you know, like coffee cups are changing, like single-use plastics are changing, you know, it's all becoming the word of choice at the moment.
What about export? Is that something you have your eyes set on, or is it a different ball game?
The export model, if we go to the UK, for example, as a next move, it'll again be a circular economy in the UK, so we shouldn't need to move material from here to the UK or further back.
Okay.
But we could create the systems anywhere. So the whole idea is that the material doesn't move that far. So where the green waste is taken in, the compost is made, and the consumer is almost underneath that platform. So the idea is that it shouldn't move too far in any system, in any kind of territory.
Makes sense. You're not creating a carbon footprint transporting stuff on a plane. You want to keep it the same. And you may have issues again, like with the transfer. I know Australia are dead against anybody bringing an apple into the country nearly. So you may have an issue, particularly when the EU become separated from the UK. That's the issues about sort of when we had the footnote at that time, the transfer of people was a difficult. Football teams had to stop coming and the matches were cancelled and things like that. So definitely if you were transporting something that came out of the ground, it may be blamed or as a contagion issue, you know. So the idea of setting up in the other countries. And do you sell any into the north of Ireland, as a matter of interest, just on the geographically?
No. All of our customer base is Dublin and greater area at the moment. So it's the way it's marketed. I think the business model works best in an urban situation. So once you move outside of an urban area and there is, let's say, a situation where people can dump their green waste illegally in farmers' fields or, you know, whatever that is, that takes the economic equation out
of it. Okay.
So that doesn't
you need
work.
To be in a concrete jungle somewhere, basically.
In the middle. Yeah. So not quite in the city centre, but the suburbia of that is the prime situation where there is enough green and enough, you know, growing area and medium and allotments and parks and schools and everything like that. So
when Dave was introducing you, he introduced the fact that you have been shortlisted for this European Business Award.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So we applied over the summer. That's when the award entries were open, and we were shortlisted as a ones to watch list during, I think it was July. It's a huge award. There's thousands of entries. It's European wide, so it was a big one to take a swing at. But we said we'd give it the full go.
Yeah, why not?
And they came back to us quite surprised, because the people that would be nominated beside us would be quite large companies who would probably have big PR teams to kind of push to get these kind of awards up for them, just to make their companies look good, as everyone wants it to be.
Sure.
So I think there was even a sense of surprise in the guys who organised the awards, and they rang me to tell me, they were like, we can't believe you've made it, but you've made it.
How did you get this far? Yeah. This little guy from Ireland, how did this happen?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're looking forward to going over? Are you going to go over there to Poland in December?
Yeah, looking forward to that. So it's always good to network with you know, people in other countries, because you do realise what's actually going on outside, you know, our own economy and our own world, and you know, just learning what techniques they're doing, what systems they're working with, what problems they're facing, and kind of, you know, seeing how we can all work together to make it work. So
How do you bring the product to market? You mentioned landscapers would be a big route to market. Do you have an online sales presence, or how do people order?
Yeah, we have an online sales platform, and we have a telesales team that you can order over the phone, and then we've our depots in Coolock and Rathfarnham, so you can face to face and come in. And ordinarily, the kind of route to market for most customers is they don't know what we do. So they come into us kind of face to face in the shop and kind of go like, well, what is the business and what do you do?
Right.
How can I be a customer? And it's great that they have that want, I suppose. But, you know, what's in it for me is they have to come in and see, well, OK, so I can bring my waste here, or you guys can collect it, or OK, I can buy the compost. So they're kind of trying to figure us out. So we always have to kind of not pigeonhole them, but kind of like put them in our business, you know, in a situation. And then they tend to never come back to us after that. They just order online or order over the phone, and they just keep in our little circular economy of green into compost and bark. And it's amazing the way nature provides the season for our business. So in the green waste doesn't actually start coming in till the end of May, June. First hedge cut and then grass. And so there's a huge green season from kind of May to October. Second hedge cut, herbaceous clearance, and then leaves. And then
you're talking technical now. Herbaceous, not on a bit.
And then, so the, all that green volume makes the compost that we need for the spring and the autumn, which is okay. when most of the compost goes out. So it, the synergy of it, it's we don't actually run out of product front or back of the year.
It's a natural cycle.
Nature has made this natural cycle that we can just produce for, and it absolutely matches demand like year on year, no matter what the weather does. So whether we have a dry summer or a wet summer, it just all balances.
Yeah.
Into a perfect sink.
And is there one product, or do you have like different aggregates or whatever?
Yeah, we started with one, and we've kind of blended into about 9 different composts and bark. So we blend a raw compost with soils and, you know, different sand mixes for different landscapers. The domestic market would have one draw of type of products, mm-hmm. which would lend itself into the soil blends, the raw compost, even a farmer manure, and then about 5 or 6 different bark mulches that we can make from the timber part that comes in. And then, you know, it has its demands insofar as, you know, play areas, we make a play bark, and that goes out to all the parks and the creches. And then, you know, the allotment owners only want the soil enricher because it's organically certified and they're growing food. So every kind of industry has its own, like, kind of hot spot of what products it loves. You know?
And do you need a lab, to test?
Yeah, absolutely. We do batch testing on every kind of consignment. So, not to get too technical, but the way the composting process works is there's a system called windrowing. So it's outside in a huge yard, and they make these prism-styled rows that are about 40 foot high, 250, 300 feet long. And each row of that is tested. So it takes about 14 to 17 weeks for that, you know, row blend to mature and become a finished compost. But all that time they're testing it for heat and, you know, all sorts of different scientific modules to make it finished. And then when it gets to the end of its life cycle, it sort of turning it across the yard for that whole time, and then the final row comes off its screen. It's fascinating and technical. Brilliant, but amazing to watch. But it's not a substrate, so we're used to peat, which is just a growing medium, but this is actually a living organism. So you can actually, you know, it's alive and it wants to get back into the soil and regenerate, which is completely natural but totally absent from modern soils. Even farmers will tell you, like, their soil, I think it was 50 years ago, the organic matter levels in soil was about 50%, and today it's about 2 or 3%.
Wow, significant change.
And that's just from over-farming, using kind of artificial fertilizers and not replenishing natural organic matter back into the soil.
And what about the future, John? I mean, are there new products maybe that you can bring to market? Or are there different variants of products? Or where do you see your business going over the next few years without, I suppose, giving away all the goodies to maybe a competitor?
Absolutely. No, I think the growth is going to be, you know, moving into micro urban areas. So where we've concentrated maybe on the capital and the biggest urban draw in Ireland, it's now moving out to the most active towns in Ireland. And, you know, it's actually as schemes like GIY and everything that kind of get on, with allotment growing, people growing their own veg, that has its own natural demand for compost that hasn't been there before. So the more people move into, you know, actual horticulture and agricultural home projects, that's really a huge growth market. And I think we're seeing people lose trust with food all the time, that they now believe, no, I'd actually rather grow it myself and, you know, grow their own potatoes or cabbages, or, you know, have chickens, have beehives, you know, that whole industry is definitely
around,
it's a huge growth, which wasn't there 20 years ago.
So typically a cubic meter of mulch for my back garden or front garden or anyone that's listening, what would it cost to get it delivered?
We kind of, it's a very tight band range. It's kind of between 59 to 79 euros for the various different products. And that's if you want to put a bark down or a soil enricher onto your bed. So for most people, like, I kind of always stay with the allotment owners because they're probably the most passionate following customers we have. But most allotments would only use about 1 cubic meter per end season. So they put one down in maybe October, one down in March, because they have a specific crop rotation and they'd only have certain beds cleared then. So, you know, working with that, it's very little compost required for the whole year. And they need nothing else. There's no need for a tomato feed or a liquid feed. You know, it's enough nutrition to just really, really vitalize the soil.
It's very attainable.
It's a lovely business, isn't it?
Yeah,
I just,
fantastic business. We could talk about it all night.
And your brand is just to coming out of you, oozing from you. It's great.
It's great. John, thanks a million for coming in and telling us about mulch.
Thank you so much, guys. Pleasure.
And your website is mulch.ie. Just straightforward, mulch.ie. Yeah. And you're down the road in Newtown.
Yes,
as well. So,
absolutely.
Nearby business.
Nearby business is right. Perfect. John McGuinness of Mulch, thanks a million for coming in and talking to us today. Dave, we're going to move on and we're going to talk about Brexit. And Pascal has been talking today and he's talking up the business opportunities here due to Brexit.
Well, this week, Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue has told business leaders that there are significant opportunities for Ireland with Brexit firms moving here when Britain leaves the EU. He made comments yesterday at the private event held at the British Irish Chamber of Commerce in which he discussed Brexit as well as the Budget 2020. He had emphasised the strength of Britain and Ireland's relationship, stressing the two nations were bound together by geography and a shared history, culture and trade. Attendees at the Chamber event were told that the Budget 2020 will be the right one for the economic circumstances we now find ourselves in. The Minister outlined how the government was supporting companies to prepare for Brexit, to diversify their markets and supply chains while employees could develop their new skills. However, despite the government admitting it may need to borrow in the event of a disorderly Brexit, that extra funds may be needed, be there for unemployment sectors or be they for unemployment or other sectors. The Minister also told the group at the Chamber event of the advantages of Britain leaving the EU. Now, a spokesman said afterwards that the Minister was referring to the new business relocating to Ireland as well as other expanding their operations here. And that's what he sort of meant by the headline in the red tops or tabloids was, it's great that they're leaving, but it probably wasn't really meant as that. So they quickly slipped in.
Yeah. And I mean, on a more serious side too as well, Irish stocks are dropping on the outlook of a potential hard Brexit as well, so that's not good news.
Yeah, a number of UK exposed Irish stocks faltered on the back of the EU warning that Britain is heading for a no-deal Brexit, and the European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker has said a damaging no-deal Brexit is a very real possibility, with London's ideas for solving the contentious issue of the Irish border still unlikely to unlock a deal just 6 weeks before Britain are due to leave. This is very little time left, he said. There's no deal and it's very real, he said, it could happen. And Juncker said during the debate on Brexit at the European Parliament. Irish stocks were also hit. The banks drove down. AIB were down 2% and Bank of Ireland is trading over 3.5%. And forecourt operator Apple Green, who were in the business today, in the news today for other reasons, was down 2.7%. And travel stocks at Ryanair and Irish Ferries, owned Irish Continental Group, were both down 1%.
Brilliant. Okay, coming up in the second part of Nearby Business today, David Bell will be here shortly from the HR department. And this week we're going to look at how employers can help working parents with all the stress of September. And before the end of the programme then, we'll talk to Ronan Crinium from movehome.ie down the road in Drumcondra. He's going to join us for an update on the latest commercial and domestic property values on the north side of the city.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Your 24-hour community station.
867 1190.
Near FM.
And welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. The text line is open. It's 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
David Bell from the HR department is here now. And good evening, David. This week we're going to look at how maybe employers can help working parents with all the stress of September. Is September more stressful than any other month?
Well, I think traditionally, I suppose people would have thought that January post-Christmas tends to be the one that people focus on. It's the depth of winter and the doom and gloom after Christmas. But I think September does have its own part to play in that sense, in that it's a mixture of, I suppose, people have either been on holidays in the summertime. Sometimes the summertime can mean that businesses slow down a bit and there's more time for maybe managers or owners to think about where they're going and then impose that on their staff when they come back. And also, I think there's obviously family changes. Traditionally, we see photographs of in the newspaper of all the children go back to school and they don't have to be starting school for the first time. I suppose at every level there are children now that are going into secondary school or going into primary school or are going into one of the big, junior cert. They're leaving cert. So there are probably stresses and strains that are there on the family, a mixture of both of them that can give rise to some problems, yeah.
Yeah, so what can employers do or what sort of action can they take or maybe tips or tricks maybe that would help settle employees or maybe give them maybe a bit of flexibility around the start of September, something like that. What could employers do?
I think maybe find out, you know, if there is something amiss or, you know, sometimes there's always a simple reason for something going wrong. And one of the things that, you know, maybe in terms of working time, so if you have an employee who might have child starting school or needs to be dropped to a different school and it's not part of their normal routine, they might need a bit more time to maybe get into work and be prepared to stay a bit later. That sounds very simple, but it is amazing how many times, because often employees don't want to, you know, ask for any favours or what they feel are favours, and there's a sense that, you know, that's the start time and that's the be-all and end-all. I think people have got a lot better, and I think it's much more common. We've spoken a number of times on the show about flexibility and recognising different makeups of families, etc. So I think the days of the strictly sort of 9 to 5 or half 8 to half 4 or 9 to half 5 are probably gone. But having said that, I think there are still people who would be maybe concerned to bring any issue to their managers or the owner's attention in case it might be misconstrued or misinterpreted as something that's not stopping them doing their job. So I think if the person in charge starts that conversation and recognizes that maybe there's been changes, it could lead to a compromise even for a short period of time. So things like that, you know, they sound very simple, but they are very effective and it can be a great help for people rather than having to worry and get stressed. And I genuinely, you know, I've had one or two practical situations where that's happened, where it's got, you know, even quite serious in terms of disciplinary, and it's only after it came to the precipice that the person finally sort of said, look, they were just really struggling to get into work for the time they were due in. And
yeah,
of course things were adapted. So it sounds simple, and why would people not say it? But you'd be surprised how many people don't.
Yeah, I suppose they think maybe it'll be held against them or in terms of maybe promotions or whatever other opportunities there might be. And I suppose too, it's good for maybe the employer to take the first step or be proactive in asking employees, you know, particularly because most businesses, certainly smaller businesses, they have some knowledge of what their employees' domestic situation is. So, you know, just to even ask, I suppose, would be a good idea.
Exactly, and to give them, as you say, so it's not a request coming from the employee. It doesn't seem, it's more of a discussion from the employer, and obviously that has puts a different tone on the whole thing, and I think that's a very good suggestion, yeah.
I was reading your blog, which you do every week as well, David, and there's a couple of interesting things that stuck out for me. One was that you quote some research that shows that returning to work after holidays, I suppose after the summer break, can be more tiring than initially expected, with the brain having to switch back on and become stimulated again. So, you know, maybe when we're back off holidays, even though we're nice and rested, we're just not fired up, I suppose. Would that be the way to put it?
Yeah, I think there is that sort of, you know, you do obviously switch off, and there's probably, if you're a drinker, you probably drink a bit more than you normally would, and you probably eat a bit more than you normally do. And obviously it is a necessary thing to do, and obviously to take a break and to relax and to try and get away from the workplace, especially nowadays when it's harder and harder to do that. But I think the research showed that it's just getting re-energized after that is the problem. And sometimes, again, it can cause people to reflect, and maybe they come back and they're not as enthusiastic as they might have been in the past. And, you know, sometimes that length of time away, you've got time to think, you've got time to reflect. That can certainly give rise to some disgruntlement or some questioning by the employee. Are they in the right place? Are they in the right job? Is the job going well? And that can have a knock-on effect to the employer, that they could either notice maybe a downturn in the performance, or else the employee might take the opportunity to sort of say, look, I've been having to think about it, maybe pay rises or changes of a role or maybe some promotion opportunity, things like that, which, you know, can be challenging for an employer at the best of times. So that sometimes does happen, yeah.
Yeah, I see one of your suggestions for stimulating a healthy brain activity is doodling. I must have a very active brain because I'm a terrible doodler.
I know, and it's funny. I read that, and I'm the same. And I sometimes think if I'm in a meeting, people think I'm ignoring it.
Yeah.
But I find the page, all sorts of shapes and sizes. Yeah, no, it's funny. And the research, the reason I put it in there, just as it was sort of slightly tongue in cheek, but it does. You know, there's been tests done where your actual memory is better. So it's maybe for all the doodlers out there not to feel bad. And if the people think that if you're doodling, you're not listening to them and that you're in another place, it in fact is the opposite. So it does help some people's concentration. So if you're a doodler, Declan, maybe that's the way it is for you.
I think it's going to help. I think I've got a right quote your study. It sounds very learned. It's the Journal of Applied Cognitive Psychology. So
yeah.
that's good enough for me. I'm going to put that at the top of my page.
The things I have to read in my day job.
In your day job, yeah. I think I'll put that at the top of my page. You're also suggesting, though, I suppose, in maybe a more serious way, maybe things like team building activities, training courses, even maybe motivational speakers to maybe kickstart, I suppose, the season off or the quarter off.
There's always you know, some scepticism about these people have different views on team building and social activities. Some people feel they're a necessary evil. Some people really enjoy them. I think it does depend to some extent on the culture of the business and the makeup of the business. And obviously there's a cost impact. But generally speaking, I think there are times in the year when people, as I said, mentioned after Christmas, maybe springtime, there's a sense that there's a new beginning and it's a time, and then you've got your quarterly, etc. So it sort of sometimes nicely fits into that. So if there's a general, either the employer feels that the workplace could do with some shaking up or a bit of enthusiasm, I think they just can't presume that their staff are feeling the same way just because they've had a road to Damascus decision made on the beach that things are going to change now. They're going to come all fired up. So they might just need to reflect and see, is there something that could be done to help some staff, not all of them, but some staff who might be feeling the same way, to get sort of back on track and push forward to the end of the year.
Absolutely. Well, David, as usual, lots of really good suggestions there as to how maybe, to get over the post-summer time blues and help with the stress of September. And I'm really happy about the doodling bit. So thanks a million again for taking the time to talk to us this evening. Thanks a million.
Thanks,
Declan. David Bell there from the HR department. Really interesting, Dave, isn't it? Are you a doodler?
Yeah, I draw little arrows with the two lines coming out. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of stuff like that. I don't know.
Keeps you going.
Motorbikes. I can draw motorbikes.
Keeps you going in the right direction, maybe.
Yeah.
Weather's good today. Fabulous day. And next, the retail chain, well, they're blaming the weather on their poor sales, not Brexit.
Yeah, of course they would, yes. Clothing firm Next made a disappointing start to autumn trading, which said was down to the unusually warm weather rather than the uncertainty over the B word. While it did not give figures, Next said the warm start to September has done much to hinder sales than the political temperature. It also said it's not seen any evidence that shoppers are holding back on small ticket items due to Brexit. Britain is due to leave the European Union, you know, the government and all that sort of stuff. But Next believes Brexit will only materially affect customer spending in the event that it triggers inflationary pressures on prices and logistics problems at British ports. The retailer also reported a 2.7% rise in first half profits as robust online sales, interestingly, more than offset the decline in its stores, and it maintained its forecast for the full 2019-2020 year. And it trades from about 500 stores in the UK and Ireland and about 200 stores in 40 countries overseas, and it has a directly online business. It made pre-tax profits of 319 million in the 26 weeks to the end of July, and this is up from 311 at the same time last year. So they're up 3.7% the group sales to 2.06 billion.
Billion.
So it's been good, you know.
So despite the good weather, they're not doing too badly.
But they're not only in the Halfpenny Place, and we're going to talk with the next story.
Absolutely.
Here, which is a really interesting Revolut.
Yes. What is that?
What is Revolut? I'll tell you a little bit about it in a moment, but I'm going to tell you about how well they're doing.
Okay.
Fast-growing Revolut has hired Ulster Bank's chief administrative Officer Joe Hanahan to lead its Irish operations. Mr. Hanahan, who has over 20 years banking experience, worked in a number of roles at Ulster Bank, including risk management head, customer relations and experience products director, and he's been named as the new chief executive for the Republic. He replaces William Keane, who departed the company less than a year after being appointed in 2017. Mr. Hanahan's appointment coincides with Revolut's recent decision to apply for an electronic money license from the Central Bank of Ireland. In doing so, it's following in the footsteps of Facebook, Stripe and Soldo. Now, Stripe actually have just been revalued about half an hour ago by raising funds, and they're now valued at $35 billion.
That's
dollars.
The young Limerick
the two guys,
isn't
from Limerick. Yeah,
only early 20s.
That's just an aside. $35 billion.
Coulson Brothers.
Yeah, I think they are, yeah, right. Yeah. So that's amazing. And prepaid financial services, and obtaining a license which allows them to issue payments across the European Union under passporting rights. Revolut, which has over 3,000 customers in Ireland and over 7 million globally, has recently advertised for a number of roles in the Republic, including new financial officers and risk officers. And it was founded in 2015 by two guys. One of them was Nikolai Dorovansky, and Revolut has raised $340 million in funding to date from notable venture capital firms, including Index Ventures and many others. It's currently valued at $1.7 billion. Now, that, interestingly, the other one is $35 billion, yeah. And the company is looking to raise an additional $500 million this year.
Wouldn't you wonder when AIB and Bank of Ireland, and I'm sure other big banks around the world, that you think of Lloyds or Santander or any of these kind of people, when you wonder when they were sitting in their boardrooms and putting their strategy together and their 3-year plan, their 5-year plan, did they ever think about Revolut?
No, and it's a bit like this gentleman we had, John, yeah, sort of just a simple business about waste products and grass, yeah, making something else, and they're all in their boardrooms drinking the brandy and saying how well we're doing, chaps, and all that kind of thing. Yeah. These guys come along. And Revolut offers a range of digital banking services on a mobile app targeted at young tech-savvy users. And what it does, it transfers money abroad to 29 countries. It has a prepaid debit card, which they like to have because, yeah, they're not spending money that they're going to have to worry about.
Yeah.
And enables cash machine withdrawals in 120 countries. It has a vault for budgeting and saving
money.
That's
an interesting feature. Yeah.
Great idea. So you're buying something for 6 or 7 euro,
yeah,
and it says, do you want to put a tenner in against this and save the other bit into the vault? So you're saving as well. So it's anything that makes people save. I think it's a great idea.
Great idea.
And I know people that are doing this in their 20s, 19, 20, up to 25, and they think this is a great idea. And it actually gives standard accounts, and you get a free current account, and you get a euro IBAN account. There are no fees on exchanging in 24 currencies, and you can get up to 5,000 a month on that, and you can withdraw up to 200 a month from cash machines. It's a great idea, and it's just, they're actually only in European countries at the moment, but they actually will be going to Hong Kong, Singapore and Australia in the near future. It's already attained the status of a tech unicorn, and this is interesting, a term used to describe a private startups valued at more than $1 billion.
Great. It's great if you can get it. We'll have to try and find one of them for ourselves. Okay, coming up at the moment, we're going to be talking to Ronan Crinion from movehome.ie in Drumcondra about the latest property prices here on the north side. And we'll have to talk to him about his window as well, Dave.
Yeah.
Don't forget. All that in just a moment.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest too in technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500. Or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
And welcome back to the programme once again. Busy schedule this evening. And on the line, I am joined by Ronan Crinion of movehome.ie in Drumcondra. Good evening, Ronan.
Hi, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. First of all, I'm sure you've won an award since I spoke to you last. Tell us all about it.
Well, I've just won the award for Dublin North East for the best shop front and best window display. And I'm in the final in Crook Park next Thursday. And there'll be five different areas of Dublin all represented. So I'll be representing Dublin North East. So prayer for me.
I will indeed.
And get three.
Yeah, and another final in for the Dubs.
I don't think I'll do as well as them, but listen, I'll try my best anyway.
Very good.
I haven't passed your shop for a while, Ronan. What's in your window at the moment? Tell people.
Well, I'm being a little bit satirical, and I'm a corner office, okay, so I have two big windows, and I have a large picture of myself and then a description of me as a property. And on the other window, I have a picture of Nigel, a large picture, and him described as a property. And he's described as rural, modest, and well-presented, detached currently, so available for viewing anytime.
And what's your description?
My description, well, I'm a little bit more honest. I'm a period property, neat in size, with an exceptional energy rating. I'm full of charm and character, yet requiring a little modernization.
Did you ever think of comedy script writing? That's excellent stuff. Really, I've seen it. I've passed by, and I really think it's brilliant and well done for that.
It's a little bit different, and it gives. I have about 30,000 people passing by the office on a daily basis, so it gives them just something to chuckle at. We're just running it for 4 weeks, and then we're going to do a fantastic Halloween window.
Very good. I'm looking forward to that. And the colours that you have in your logo, of course, will complement the Halloween theme.
It does.
Just the property market was talked up over the last couple of years, came back again after the crash, and we had a kind of a very sort of a period of clover there for everybody. It's steadied off again a little bit now. Would I be correct in saying that?
You would, Dave, yes. We can't argue with that. It has levelled off, all right, but particularly in the upper end of the market. Over 500,000-600,000, it's a little bit more sort of cautious, and that's because of the Brexit. But the most activity is in the 200,000-500,000, and that's for the first-time buyers. And they are still active, and there's like a selection of properties on the market, so they are buying them. And but the numbers, I'll be honest, the numbers of inquiries are down a little bit because the Brexit is having an effect on it. And I'm a long time in the business, and I'm comparing it to September the 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
The market eased considerably that year in February anyway, but then it began to just drop a little bit. And everyone talked about a third world war, etc., but it resumed again in 2002, and I honestly feel that's what it's going to do now in 2020, which is next year.
Okay, yeah, the confidence will return, perhaps. Yeah, well, and probably it's no harm to have a little bit more modest anyway. And those that band you were talking about, people into the market between 220,000, 200,000 up to 350, they will be first-time buyers, maybe in their 30s, settling down, looking for modest houses in Dunkondra and Fairview and Merino and that kind of thing, which are lovely houses and great areas and that kind of thing. Are they in demand? How is the supply at the moment of that product?
The supply is good, but the majority of the houses that are selling are the ones that are finished well, okay,
yeah,
and have a, I would say, like walk-in condition property. The ones that are a little bit slower to sell but still selling are the ones that are blank canvas that you need to modernize or you need to extend because it's hard to get builders at the moment because they're still active. So the ones that are in turnkey condition are the most popular at that price bracket. And apartments are very, very good because they're 9 times out of 10 in truly walk-in condition. You don't have to change like a bathroom or a kitchen. So again, they're always selling. And we have an awful lot of people then are trading down.
Yeah.
Say moving out of the family nest and buying something smaller, like a little townhouse in Drumcondra or Santry or Beaumont or an apartment. So there is activity there, and it's constant, Dave, at this end of the market, up to about 500,000.
Just in terms of the business of being in a landlord at the moment, the buy-to-let business, there's an awful lot of stuff you hear on the radio, and the representatives of the landlords are coming on and says it's not worth being in the business and all the regulations, and we can't increase our rent and we can't ask people to leave anymore and all of this. How is that affecting the market? Is the landlord business still a good business?
Well, Dave, the market is still quite buoyant because, like, people move every year, okay? People move in together every year. Sometimes people separate, Okay, so there's a need for 20,000 houses to buy on an annual basis. There's also a need for people that are renting, that are moving to the city, or again, moving out of home and in together with their partners. So there is always a demand. However, that demand has eased a little bit as well because the rents have, say, peaked, okay, and you get some people staying at home and saving more. All right, so there is activity, and the regulations then are sometimes turning a few landlords off because everything has to be declared. They can't increase rents at the drop of a hat. Okay, it's regulated, and they must conform to that regulation. And say a percentage of them aren't happy about that, Dave. But it's good. It's regulated, and it shows that rents can't be increased by 4%. Yeah. But as you know, it's cyclical. All right, it will peak and it'll ease, and it'll peak again.
And yields are good. I mean, people, from what you hear, people having to pay high rents, the yields are actually very good. So there's a lot of whinging going on.
There is, but that would probably be from, we'll say, the older class of landlords that had it good for so long, and that sometimes don't want or like to conform, but they have to. Okay, times change all the time, and they have to move, and they have to become more regulated, and their properties have to meet certain standards. So they're the ones probably that are like selling off properties that they just don't want to incur the cost of a refurbishment. And then when they sell those, an awful lot of owner-occupiers buy them because, to be honest with you, Dave, there's very few landlords in the property market at the moment. It's mostly owner-occupiers.
Yeah, just in terms of retail and commercial property, that's been a different track completely to the domestic ends of things. Would I be correct? It didn't really. It's fairly flat in the same period.
Yes, correct. And the retail, like the high street has changed, and I'm based in the middle of Dunconda, and when I grew up in this area, there was like a post office and a tool shop and a bakery and a laundrette and a dry cleaners, etc. There was a like a ranelagh, like a multitude of services. And in towns and villages, they have sort of like disappeared a little bit because the rents have greatly increased, and so has the market. People want like wine bars or restaurants or more convenience stores to open, so like the hardware and the dry cleaners sometimes can't afford to pay the rents now that are on the that are now demanded on the high street, because high street rents are quite high. You're talking from 30,000, 40,000, 50,000, depending on the level of demand in the village.
Yeah, I think just in terms of dry cleaning, for instance, as a business, it's changed massively. People, there's loads of different attacks on it, effectively, from people not buying clothes that need to be dry cleaned to the chemical used in the process, the restraints on people, the capital cost of setting it up and running it, and it's very labour intensive and all those things. And then you got to pay 50 grand rent as well. So it's very difficult to make money out of it. But as you say, if you look at particularly at Dunconda, I suppose, as an example, it's quite a little sort of a foodie strip there at the moment, isn't it?
It is, yes, and that's because Dunconda, we have an old established community, all right, but we also have a young generation, all right, that have bought here over the last like 10 to 20 years. But the main thing in Dunconda is there is a high level of students. That's because DCU have currently around 20,000 students, and that's going to increase over the years because they have bought All Hallows beside us here in Drumcondra, and they've bought the old St. Pat's. So DCU are going to increase the student levels to about 25,000, and a lot of those students reside and socialise in Drumcondra. So Drumcondra has changed for them in that direction, and there is more like the takeaway, sort of like we market pizza places. We've got an Insomnia coffee shop that's always quite busy. So, and that used to be a dry cleaners on the corner.
Yeah,
so that's
a
clear example of the way the market is changing. So Drumcondra is beautiful. It didn't win Tidy Village, but it is becoming more recreational this year. It didn't win the Tidy Village. Rahini, in fairness to it, won the area. So they'll be going into the finals next week. And Rahini is a beautiful place, easy on the eye with all the flowers, so it's a nice place to drive through.
And on that note, we wish you all the very best in Croke Park when you're going in for the next stage of the Dublin Awards, and well done on the window. We'll talk to you again hopefully in the new year on the radio. Thank you very much, Ronan Quinlan of movehome.ie.
AOB on Nearby Business.
Just time for one or two pieces of AOB. Dave, what have you got?
Yeah, this is interesting. A girl from Waterford, her name is Sharon Cunningham, and she's a co-founder of Shorla Pharma, and she won a top award at a ceremony in Dublin, securing a total investment fund of 40,000, and it's a cancer drug. She qualified as a chartered accountant, and she founded Shorla in 2018 after identifying a significant issue in the pharmaceutical industry. The company focuses on improving existing treatments for children and women's cancers, making them more user-friendly. And incidentally, she was a recent participant in the BBC's Dragon's Den, and she received investment from three of the dragons and their continued to help their continued growth. So it's best of luck to them with that.
Absolutely, well done, and best of luck. Now, if you're a young entrepreneur, there is a free young entrepreneurs training program available to you. If you are between 18 and 30 years old, you are eligible. The course will cover confidence building, leadership, teamwork, personal development, starting up a business, sales and marketing, social media and finance, all of the areas that you'd need to know something about. The dates are the 2nd of October to the 25th of October. It's for 4 weeks, 2 days every week, Wednesday and Thursday, 11 till 5. And the venue is the NDRC Digital Court in Dublin 8. And that's been organised by innercityenterprise.com. And if you have any interest in that, what you need to do is register your interest and get more information. And you can email youngent@innercityenterprise.com. Or there's a phone number as well. It's 01-617-4852.
Yeah, and just before we go, sorry, a little correction there. The company who won the Dragon's Den thing were actually called Shower Gem. It's on the same article, and I just misplaced the quote there. So Miss Cunningham didn't actually get that award, but she's going great with her company, and she's received a 40,000 bursary elsewhere. Okay, good. Thank
well,
you.
That's it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. We'll both be back with another Nearby Business. Actually, we won't be back next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. There's a live outside broadcast next Thursday. So myself and Dave get the evening off.
Yes.
And we'll be back in a fortnight with another live Nearby Business at 6 p.m. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch or have a comment on any of the stories featured this evening, or if you have an idea you'd like to discuss, get in touch on Twitter at @nearby_business, # local biz.
So for me, Dave Daly,
and myself, Declan Ralph, see you soon on the radio. Bye for now.
Thanks. Bye-bye. For listening.